So I guess what we were going to, that was sort of our stories as such, and we were going to talk just a little bit, I guess, now about, you know, just to narrow it down to body image, attractiveness, and things like that, and self-esteem and all. And then we'll see, again, please keep passing those Ask It Basket things around so that we, if people want to ask questions, we can keep, you know, we'll have some of those and pull them out. I'll talk a little bit about a couple of things that I, you know, in my time I came to understand. I think one of the greatest gifts I got from program, you know, had to do with like the sixth and seventh steps, which are, I glossed over for many years, but the whole idea of humility, not humility in the way I had the idea of it, but an old sponsor used to say, humility is just having an objective view of your place in the world. You're not at the top, you're not at the bottom, you're just another bozo on the bus. And I used to hold myself to such extreme, you know, anything less than perfect, I was shit, you know. Part of it came that I sort of raised myself. I was with my father from 13 on, and he was I was a latchkey kid, so he literally would leave in the morning. So I essentially raised myself, and one of the things that I, you know, we don't let 13-year-olds raise themselves because they're not emotionally mature. We don't let 13-year-olds raise other kids because they're not emotionally mature to be good parents. Well, I raised myself, and so somewhere along the way, I got the idea that there were two things in life. There was perfection, and there was shit. And if I wasn't perfect, I was shit. And anything less than perfect was just such a self-damning thing all the time. And the wonderful thing of working program long enough is I began to understand, you know what, I'm just another human being. There's a guy named Harlan runs these workshops, and he has a great line. He says, no matter how much we work this program, no matter how much we memorize the first 164 pages and the 12 and 12 and all this stuff, we don't rise above the level of human being. And that on any given day, we screw up royally, no matter how much we don't want to. And I get the idea I'm just another person. Then it also helped me with the concept of attractiveness and things, you know. And I also had interesting things that helped me model how to look at myself differently. When I lived back in Connecticut, I was part of this group in Darien. It was a great, strong OA group that I found out many years later was started by a woman from LA who moved there. So my connection with Serenity Sunday had been going on long before I moved to LA. And one of the women there, I had this major crush on. I mean, I was married, she was married, there wasn't anything going to happen, but I just thought she was... It was one of those people, and everybody's got at least somebody who, when they walk in the room, you go, or maybe somebody on TV or movies, or you just get that little extra, oh my God. And she spoke one day. She'd been seeing her for a year or two, and finally she told her story one night, and one of the things she talked about was how she felt she was not attractive, that she was didn't like the way she felt, looked, etc. And so I'm driving home thinking about it, and I'm thinking about, you know, isn't this like typical OA? Here's this woman, I just think, she looked like Christine Lockie. I don't know if you know who the actress is. Well, she was even better looking than that, okay? And Christine Lockie is nothing to shake a stick at. And I'm driving home going, God, this woman doesn't think she's attractive. And it got me thinking, well, what did I find attractive about her? And I started thinking, well, she had this killer smile. She had this killer smile. She had a great laugh. She was funny. She was attractive. She flipped her hair a certain way. And I was thinking of all these things that built up to make the that I felt when I saw her. And I realized almost none of those things did she see when she got up in the morning, stood in the mirror and went, and looked at herself. And what that made me do is think, you know what? What do I do in the morning? I get up, I look in the mirror, and go, and I don't like what I see. I don't see any of the other things that make up attractiveness. And it really helped me start to think about that. And you know, again, I mentioned earlier, weight was way out of proportion. You know, I had a friend over in Howe. I loved her. She was wonderful. And she lost a huge amount of weight. But she sounded like Fran Drescher. But worse. and yet... The funny thing, I mean, she would talk about, I don't know, and I'm a mean guy, you know. And I know that she never thought of that at all. It was all about the weight to her. And it was just sort of interesting to think about how attractiveness is made up of so many things, yet I tend to funnel it all into my weight and into things like that. And to always have the negative opinion. And I came up with what I call my 98% theory. And I'll tell you what it is. It's that 1% of the world are goddesses and gods. You know what I mean? Everybody, if they walk in the room, every woman goes, and if, you know, if it's a guy, you know, a guy, every guy goes, and then 1% of the world is like physically deformed. You know, not a, you know, but everybody goes, yikes. And we're all in, the rest of us, we're all in the great 98%. Some of us are, some people are going to find us attractive. Some people aren't. It has nothing to do with anything other than personal taste. I find certain people, I don't find Cindy Crawford the slightest bit attractive. You know who I find attractive? Whoopi Goldberg. I know a lot of people say, Whoopi Goldberg's the ugliest. I don't see that. She's got a great smile. She's funny. She's, and I realized this is such an independent thing, you know. I remember talking to an old sponsor back east once, and I was talking about how I didn't feel attractive. And he says, are you straight or gay? I said, well, I'm straight. He says, well, then you don't know what's an attractive man, do you? It was just sort of an interesting, he was giving me sort of like you know, folk wisdom there. And I was like, well, I guess that's true, you know. You know, but I do think about some of the things, and then, you know, I wrote a script once, and it was about L.A. and the kind, you know, I've been slightly in the periphery of the entertainment business, and I wrote a line once that said, some of the ugliest people I've ever met are gorgeous. And in L.A., you may know what I mean by that, and that it's not just about that. And, you know, one of the things, I sponsored somebody in Howe when I was in there. She had been like a star in Howe for a long time, and then she sort of stopped, and she's been slipping and sliding for years. And her story was, she had been heavy her whole life. It had all been about, I got to lose the weight, but she never did. She never got married. She never dated. She came to Howe, dropped the weight. She was thin. She had stayed thin for a long time. But here was the, what, and then she started slipping and sliding again. And then when I became her sponsor, you know, in hearing her story, I think I began to understand. She had spent her whole life dealing with weight, never done anything. She was doing it now. She lost the weight. She was a thin woman in L.A., but she was a thin 50-year-old woman in L.A. And all of a sudden, there wasn't much attention coming, and she was thin, and she didn't have food on top of that. And I think that's why she gained it back, because if I can make it about the weight again, then somewhere later I can lose the weight, but I'm never going to lose the years, you know? And it was just sort of an interesting comment. The other thing I'll say, and I don't know what your feelings on it, it took me a long time to get something that... I always joke, I have the trifecta of cynicism, okay? I am an alcoholic comedian from New York, okay? You give me any of those things, any one of those things, and I'm, when you tell me something I think is the slightest bit hokey, I'm going to come back and be sarcastic, and I'm going to be, you know. And I also know now sarcasm is another one of my diseases, ways of getting me to you know, have contempt prior to investigation. When I first started hearing about positive affirmations, and again, I'm that you know, that trifecta, I'm like, oh yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go stand in front of a mirror and tell myself, you are good looking and people like you. And I'm like, give me a break. But you know what I realized? I have no trouble buying the negative affirmations constantly. The K-fuck that's in my head. I take them in. I am a sucker. I'm the biggest rube about taking in all those negative things. But the idea of me standing and saying, you're not bad looking, you're not this, you're not that, I would, oh my God, I can't do that. That's egotistical. But I realized, where I got those somewhere. I didn't come out of the chute with this. I got these negative things somewhere, and the only way I'm ever going to reprogram them is to try and change that. And as hokey as it sounded, I started to try to do a little of that. Again, I didn't do it like other people, maybe, and well, but I really did see that some of, I had to counter the negative talk that was in my head, you know. And part of the other thing, and I'll let Ann take over, is I remember having a sponsor once who, he said, you know, part of this negativity is really grandiosity with a mirror image. You know, you can't just have done something slightly wrong. You've got to be the biggest F-up on the face of the earth. Because that, then somehow there is an ego in being the worst anything, you know? And he's like, lose it. You know what? You're not the worst. You're not the best, you know? It's that great line of program where the piece of shit the world revolves around. That's sort of where I am. I either have to be at the top or at the bottom, and I can't stand the idea of just being another bozo on the bus sometimes. So anyway, do you have anything on the track?
Yeah. But what you were saying about that ego thing, my husband and I went to the high school football game. We're the high school football game of the year up the street from us yesterday. And their colors are deep green. And I had a bunch of them because my son used to go to that high school, and I was putting them on and changing, and he's like, gotta go. And I said, but do I need a bra? And he goes, guess what? It's not about you. They're not looking at you, okay? And, you know, of course they didn't, but I need a reminder. That's interesting. What is really attractive? When he said that, I thought about, well, what attracts me about my husband? He is the most generous person I have ever met in my whole life. And I have learned to be more generous as a result. I mean, I get chills just saying that. I mean, yeah, he has a really deep voice and, you know, he has these sparkling eyes, but it's the generosity that just gets me, and that's the foreplay, you know? If he was really nice to someone that day, okay, fine, we're there, you know? So I talked about being oblivious, and body image is so much a part of that. When I was in college, I had an internship at a Sacramento hospital, canvassing the patients and asking them what we could have done better in the hospital, and then getting the information back. And I had no clue about professional dress at all. I didn't have parents who lived in the normal world. One was a farmer, one was a farmer. I wasn't really given any instructions, and I was really clueless and oblivious. So I wore this dress, probably mostly to hide my enlarging figure, that was very deeply cut. I don't have a lot of boobs, but apparently what I had was distracting. And so everywhere I went, from room to room, they would get complaints in the hospital that I was totally unprofessional, and I didn't have a clue. I mean, I could have stood in front of the mirror and not seen that. So, I mean, it's just, I need to ask people now. You know, I'm probably better now, but I just really had no clue. The other thing that was interesting about the body image is that we dealt with many years of infertility, which meant we had to have sex whether we wanted to or not, which really puts another spin on sexuality and on if you're attractive or not, you know, or if you're feeling attractive or not, or anything. If anybody has questions about it, I'd be glad to work with you on that. And then the other thing is, like, when I was in my 20s, I went somewhere where I met an older woman who was very sparkling and very kind of like a former Las Vegas woman, and she said, I'll tell you that here's the answer to boy things, Anne. She says, I have a big butt. And she said, so I find men who like big butts. That's the answer. And I just love that. There is, again, that self-compassion. It's just so wonderful. There's one other thing that was going to be... So if you want to write this down, this may be the most useful mantra. We talked about affirmations in my whole life. And it's just three sentences, and people who've heard me before have heard me say this. I have it in my bathroom. I put it in my wallet. I don't always look at it, but I know it's there. So it's, I am in exactly the right place. That's the first sentence. Doing exactly the right thing. And doing it exactly right. And that is so common. My blood pressure goes down when I read that. It does apply to sex. If I can be present and realize, I don't know what I'm doing. Is this good or is this bad? Now I have the grocery list. That's okay. You're supposed to have so much self-compassion. I'm in exactly the right place, doing exactly the right thing, and doing it exactly right. It just goes back to self-compassion. So.
Yep. Okay, thanks. Well, we were passing around ask-a-baskets. Now, I don't know whether maybe we didn't explain ask-a-baskets right, but the whole idea is to write them down and put them back in the basket. But so there were none in that ask-a-basket. But if anybody has any of the white ones that were done for body image, or are there any questions that came up that people wrote down? There's one there, and there's another one. Hang on.
I'll keep having.
Yeah.
Just send it around. Send it around, just keep going, and then when we need more questions, we'll... Alright, so I'm going to talk a little bit about one more thing, which was when I was in my 20s, I was in Israel in kibbutz, and I met a woman named Lisa who was from Sweden. And we thought about having an affair. I guess I was 25. Because I had no boyfriend at that time. And you could smell the need on me. I wanted someone so badly. I mean, I think that is very off-putting. But I had no control over it. I wanted someone so bad. So we thought about having a gay affair. And we decided it's just too complicated already. Life is so complicated. And it was so politically bad to do that.
And I, here's my view on Venus, and it may be completely wrong. I think that, for the most part, our culture is so against males who are gay that unless you are truly, deeply gay, you're not going to just try it. But for women, I think there may be an intellectual trying of like, oh, let me see, because they're nicer, and then also a deep need, like a genetic. So there may be both kinds. And I certainly was willing to jump in, but made the decision not to.
Okay.
Just to add to the mix. Okay, so we got.
Okay, so we got some questions. Oh, we have another one. Okay, so I'm just going to pull them at random here, and I'll just if I, you know, either of us choose to answer. The first one is, how do I avoid letting men's opinion of me determine my self-esteem?
Okay,
Sharon.
I'm trying to think of a specific. You know, maybe it's like the takes a village thing that he was talking about. Maybe it's that thing where you pick up the phone and you say to someone, I don't think this person, you know, either they said something or they looked at me differently or something. Because my reality is not real. And I think it's about checking out what's real. And it could also be that that person doesn't like me. And then I guess he doesn't like big butts. I'll find the man who likes big butts. You know what I mean?
Right.
So those are my two off the top.
Well, and I, just like was said, I mean, the thing that therapist said to me really helped me. I came to understand that it was okay that not every woman I met was going to find me attractive, and it's okay. You know, I can only take one at a time anyway, so what the heck's the difference? But there is a truth, and it really has to start to be an inside job. I mean, this is where the thing in the big book is true. We treat it just like another problem. You know, if I don't like myself, you know, and I'm constantly looking for outside validation, even if I get it this time, the next one who says no is not gonna is gonna destroy me. So the idea of just sort of saying it's okay, and it's okay that that person not like me, you know, for whatever reason. It, you know, I don't like liver. You know, I have been on a liver-free diet since I left my mother's house. Even as an adult, I tried. Because I had a person I dated who loved liver. She said, you just haven't had it made right. Made it, took one bite, went, nope. Don't like liver, and that's it. And it's okay, you know. And, you know, there's obviously still a lot of liver, so people do like it. And it's the same thing. You know, not everybody's going to like me, and I don't like everybody else, but it's okay, you know. Okay, I have strong chemistry and feelings for someone with no long-term potential. We see each other casually, but I'm becoming emotionally attached. I'm giving him all the power by waiting for him to initiate seeing each other because I'm afraid to come off as needy. How do I get more out of the relationship or just enjoy without getting attached?
My first thing that came to mind was write about it, you know. And what I was told to do is, you write the first line is, "Dear God, guide my pen in honesty," and then just look, have a conversation. It could be between you and God, a dialogue. That's one way. And then what I was always told is, whatever I write, I need to read it to someone. It's back to the, this is my reality. Now let me check it out with someone. So, you know, you can also work the steps on a short thing like that. So that might be one way.
Yeah. I know when I the person I was dating, who ended up being my wife, you know, when I first started dating, she said, I just want to be friends. And I'm the king of the guy who always gets told he just wants to be friends. But that's okay. I was in a place where I wasn't that, you know, it was okay to just do that. But as time went on, I kept getting mixed signals. And I finally was able to just go to her and say, I'm getting mixed signals. I'm fine with it if you want this, but I'm picking up mixed signals. And the response I got is, let me get back to you, because she had to think about it, and as it turned out, thought to a therapist. But the point is that there may be mixed signals there. You may be picking up stuff, and it's okay to, you know, and there may be a fear of, well, gee, I don't want to confront him, because then he's going to say no, and then I'm going to feel rejected. But on the other hand, are you driving yourself crazy with somebody who maybe is sending out mixed signals?
Can I?
Sure.
I'm going to just do a tangent on that. Okay, so I have an example in a slightly different part of life, which is, I have something that I found is called face blindness, which means I won't necessarily remember you once I've met you, and it's really tricky because it makes it hard to be public person. You see a lot of people, you know them, and then the next time you see them, you have not a clue who they are. And they go, oh, how are you? It was so good to see you. And you're going, who is this? No. So I go to a conference every year, and for 7 years I've seen this one woman who is delightful. And I knew I sort of knew her, but I sort of avoided her because I had no idea what her name was or how I knew her or anything. It's just embarrassing. And she came up to me finally one day and said, you don't like me, do you? And I came across as aloof, but her being honest allowed me to respond. We went out to lunch, and now we're really close. And she thinks it's hilarious that the whole thing was that I didn't remember who she was. But the ironic thing is, once we sat down to lunch, we had enough of a bounding that I now remember her, of course, you know. So anyway, it really comes down to honesty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What would you say about someone who has lost the weight and clothes are baggy now and loose, but looks in the mirror and sees herself still as huge? Does this mean you don't love yourself or accept yourself? I can tell you that I think the weight in your brain comes last, and that you know, there is such a thing as body dysmorphia. It's a real thing, and it took me a long time to be able to sit there and not, you know, see that, because like one of the things, I was heavy for so long, my upper legs were very large because I had spent a long time, you know, carrying a lot of weight around, and I tended to, for whatever reason, I think because I saw them larger, I saw myself as larger than I actually was, and I think it takes some time.
How much time do you think?
It took me a couple of years, I think, before I got to the point of feeling normal, you know. And one of the other things that I don't have an answer for it. I know I got resentful when I had people in my life who didn't remember me fat. I felt, don't you know, this is my whole identity. I used to be the fat guy.
Right.
But the reality is I haven't been for a long time. And it is part of my history, but it was such a strange thing. And you know, people didn't get that, you know.
Really think it's physiological. I mean, I really think it is. It's like your brain is making new connections about who you are. And so it goes back to self-compassion. I'm not there yet. It must be true because the weight says that the baggy pants are baggy. I need to wait. So, yeah.
Yeah. Although I lost a lot of weight, and the number is good, my body is soft and mushy, and now I think, how can a man be attracted to a mushy body? And so now my goal is to work out and get harder. Are there guys who like the mushy bodies, I guess? I think there's a deeper question here. Well, you know, first of all, guys who like a really rock hard muscular bodies are called gay. no, I'm joking about that. But you know, there is a physiological difference between men and women. Women have a higher body fat content. That's just the laws of nature. And for me, vive la différence. I think again, it almost comes down to that thing of because I wasn't gay, I don't know what women found attractive in me, and I'm going to have to just sort of let that go. I mean, I certainly had a lot of wreckage. You know, when you've been 100 pounds more than you are, you've got some wreckage on your body, and it's a little shaming sometimes to have to deal with that. But I'm like, you know, what am I going to do? You know, I'm going to at some point, if I'm going to have sex, somebody's going to see me without clothes on, and they're going to see stretch marks. That's just the life. And it's okay, you know. And the fact is, if somebody really cares about you, you know, it's so funny that the only weight I am really, really concerned with in life, for me, has ever been my own. I have dated women who are heavy. I've dated women who are thin. It does, for whatever reason, the only weight that really affects me is my own. You know, I'm a much more easygoing about other people's weight than I am about my own. I think that's just the history. So I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, sure, I understand wanting to get in good shape. But again, don't make it that you've got to be perfect before you're out there. I have a couple of these that are hard to read. Only I did put please print on the top, but you know, I don't think some people notice. I find it very hard to feel attractive unless I'm at a certain weight. There's sort of a theme here. Unless I'm at a certain weight and there are no women nearly that are more attractive, I'm ashamed to admit it. Could you suggest that gently that it might alleviate my feelings and perceptions of inadequacy? I mean, again, I'm not 100% sure about that one, other than, you know, I mean, at some point, you know, there's a great paragraph that comes after the for those who've read the acceptance paragraph on page 417, the one that's right after it's a great one, too, because it says, when I criticize you or me, I'm criticizing God's handiwork. I'm saying I know better than God. And I read that for years as, oh, don't be judgmental toward people. But, you know, it didn't just say when I'm criticizing you. It said when I'm criticizing you or me. When I'm criticizing myself, I'm criticizing God's handiwork. And I need to remember that a little bit. And, you know, it's okay. How do I reconcile the difference between the way I look and the way culture considers it attractive? Well, you don't want to get me on a political thing on that. I said to somebody once, I'm really glad I don't have any daughters, because I can only imagine how they sit and they watch commercial after commercial after commercial for these high fat, high whatever, and let's go back to the sitcom with the four size zero actresses, and their heads must explode. Because it is. I think it's way out of proportion. And I have friends who are actors and actresses, and they struggle, you know.
Especially Los Angeles, you know, especially California. First time I went to San Antonio, Texas, I really didn't know there were that many heavy people in the world. They just, I think they stay inside in California. It's hard. So here's one thing that I did, which is I never joined a gym before, but when I joined the gym that I'm a member of now, there are old people, there are heavy people, there are ugly people in my gym. When I went to a different gym, they were all beautiful, and it was really scary and hard for me. So I like my gym, which is, you know, I'm trying to find a population where I'm very competitive, so I will compare myself. Where it's just not an issue, where we're a tribe and not, you know, clamoring on top of each other. I had another thought, but it went out of my mind. So. You know, again, I guess it's just keep checking in with the people and be self-compassionate. Oh, I know. They did a study and they said women are like 10 times more depressed after reading a fashion magazine. You know, don't read the magazine.
Yeah.
I'm a writer, and when I used to read writing magazines at night and then get horribly depressed that because all my friends had gotten awards and I didn't know what to do, and my therapist said, don't read the magazines and don't read them before you go to bed. You know, so some of it is taking myself off the playing field. I don't do that. I don't participate that. I have friends who, when they go to the doctors to be weighed, they turn around on the scale or they say, is this important, because I don't think I need to be weighed for this appointment. You know, doctors are used to that by now. So some of it is deciding, is this important? Can I not play here?
Here's one from a man. Or I think a man. I keep approaching every decent prospect hoping she's the one, quote unquote. Then it's heartbreaking when it doesn't work out. How do you move through this? Well, as a guy, you know, there's that whole kissing the frogs thing. Part of this is, I mean, I had a friend who had seriously decided he wanted to find somebody he had been, you know, sort of not that interested. And he said, it's like sales, it's a numbers game. And now, if you go into everyone as being, is this the one? I think that could be part of the problem. In other words, you got to go and say, I'm going to have a date. See if I like her. You know, see if this is what, and not run it out. You know, and it's hard because I got the kind of brain that does the same thing. I remember when I was, before I got married, I was standing in a line at the bank, and I was looking at this girl, and she looked pretty and everything, and I'm like, yeah, but she probably doesn't want kids, and I'm haven't met her, haven't talked to her for a second. I've already decided she doesn't want kids, but that's just the way my crazy brain works. And I realized that I needed to do this exactly. I had an old sponsor when I call up. I'd be going through some, you know, drama in my first 10 years where everything was a drama. He'd say, John, look down. Where are your feet? Where are your feet? Meaning, remember where you are now, not where you are. And not try and make it, is this the one? Because I think you add an extra pressure to yourself, which probably exudes outwards to whoever it is you may be on a date with, you know.
So, when I met my husband, I knew he was the one, and this has happened many times prior to me. But this, I just thought, oh my God, this is wonderful. And then he didn't call for a week, and that whole week, I came home from work every day, I canceled everything at night, and I waited at the phone. I just waited, and my girlfriend said, it's okay for you to wait, but don't tell him that you've waited. when he finally called. And a week later, he had been out of town. And he called and said, what have you been doing? And I said, waiting for you to call. And it just came out of my mouth. But I'm so glad, you know, because again, I am who I am. And if this man can't accept me in the bigness and blubberliness that I am, and that, you know, everything, as my husband said, there are a whole bunch of little gas bubbles in my brain, and whenever one happens to hit the circle, which is my mouth, they come out. You know, and he finds it hilarious. So, and the other thing is, my therapist said many years ago that my assignment 1 week was to ask for more things. So I went out that week and I asked for stuff, and everybody said no, and I came back and I was crying. She said, well, I didn't tell you, you'd get it. You just have to learn how to ask. So it's really the same thing.
Yeah. How do I stop sending off the vibe that I'm unavailable? I would like more men to ask me out, but people say I send off a vibe that says leave me alone. And I mean, I think it's... I just came back from a men's retreat, and one of the things that came up among men, of course, is men, our only identifiable emotion that we're willing to own is anger. But when you get under every emotion, to me, it's fear. Fear is underneath everything. And if I can push you away so that you don't ask me, I don't have to deal with maybe you're not going to ask me, or I'm going to go out with you and you're going to decide you don't like me, or any one of those things. And I think it's about it's a fear, and it's hard because it does involve making yourself a little vulnerable. But you know, just going out with somebody, you know, and we're going to talk more when we get into the sexuality thing in a second about the idea that, you know, we live in a time, we were talking about this at lunch, where there is no ambiguity about the idea that no means no. Women are in charge of making any decisions about where any of this goes. And by the way, let me just take a second to say, this is a workshop on sexuality. There's nothing that says you have to have sex at all. In other words, I led one of these and a person came up to me afterwards and said, geez, you know, I've made a choice to not have sex, and I sort of felt like I'm the odd man out, person out here. And I said, I really apologize for not making that clear, that there's nothing that says sex has to be involved in it. Now, again, when I use the phrase sex, it's taking on a lot of different things, but just the physical act of sex. So I would just say a lot of it's about fear and being willing to conquer the fear. And it's hard because I think part of it is, again, what we were talking about, we don't have the filter on attractiveness. And I've known women, you know, when I was younger, I used to say, oh, we got these, they're stuck-up women. Guys will say stuck-up women. And I just think it's women who haven't learned how to deal with being attractive. You know what I mean? And so their only thing is get away from it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And there's other women who are really just as attractive, but who found a way that they can gently say. And again, that's where that it takes a village. Find somebody who really, go find a woman who you know is really attractive and ask her, how does she deal with that? You know.
We were talking at lunch about, there are a lot of women who, it seems, in OA who have been raped or have had some incest and issues, which I don't share. And so I'm feeling badly that that isn't my experience, that I can, not that I can experience it, but that I can't be useful in that way. But it may be that, so the heaviness is a boundary, and that makes sense. So if I lose that boundary, then the aloofness maybe becomes a boundary. Same thing. And it's just learning how to do it. You know, I was good at saying, I have no anything about it because I was just exuding, I need me, I want you, I want you. And they're probably just the same side, a different side of the same coin. And it goes back to, I'm not there yet. I can see it. In Al-Anon, they say half of it is just admitting, well, we say that in our program too, admitting I'm a compulsive overeater, I finally see the problem. As soon as I see it, already something is different. Just to be aware, not to make any changes, and just see, how am I loose? How am I, for me it would have been, how am I too needy? For you it might be, how am I pushing people away? Just notice.
I was recently at a bridal party at a wedding, and afterwards I obsessed over all the bad things I saw about my body in pictures. Any tips on countering these thoughts? I guess I always wonder whether, you know, there's probably models out there who do the same thing. These people that are on the covers of magazines and go, oh my God, my left upper arm looks horrible, or whatever. I mean, I don't know how you counter that other than to say, you know.
At my sister's wedding in 1978, I was the heaviest I've ever been, probably over 190, and I'm like 5'8". I just hate those photographs. I can't really tell you that there's a good way to look at them. I mean, now I can say, oh, that's what I used to be, and it's useful to pass around that picture in OA. So maybe, okay, here's the way. I had chronic fatigue syndrome for many years. I was very, very sick. The only thing that got me through was I thought one day I won't be sick, and I will be able to help someone by telling them how I got through this. So maybe that photograph will be very useful, and it will show someone what you used to be. Maybe that would be your useful picture. I don't know.
Okay, is being abstinent from overeating being your ideal weight? I hear many people in groups say they are abstinent from overeating yet they're still overweight. What is the true meaning of abstinence? Well, geez, there's a question that we could spend 2 hours on. You know, everybody has to make that decision for themselves. It drove me crazy, and that's actually one of the reasons I went over to another program for a while, because there was a point which it was a lot worse, where there were a lot of people who were 100 and 200 pounds overweight saying they're abstinent, and it just was blowing my mind. And it really is up to everybody. I can tell you that, you know, OA last year, not this year, but the year before at the conference, change their definition of abstinence to say maintaining or working toward a healthy body weight. Healthy being a hugely wide hoop to jump through, just being healthy. But, you know, there are going to be people in denial, and that's part of this. You know, we are a wonderfully democratic organization, and in a lot of ways more democratic than some of the other 12-step programs. If somebody in AA stood up and it was obvious they were drinking, they'd be sort of shuttled off the stage really quickly. But here, everybody gets to speak no matter what, and they may be in the food and may not have a clue they're in the food. You know, that's one of the things that I find the hardest in this disease. I said, I know people who've had slips in AA, but they know they had to slip. I know people in OA who were in the middle of a slip and not realize it. And so part of that is, you know, the ideal weight piece.
It's not black and white.
No, it isn't.
Very hard.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think we'll make this one. Oh, we have one more. Okay. Can you address the idea of not waiting to date until you feel good about your body, the double-edged sword? Well, like I say, I think it still goes back to fear and using the weight as the excuse, because there's so much out there that's such an unknown. Oh my God! You know what's easier? Let me wait till I get to that number. When the reality is you're just looking for a reason to kick the can down the road a little extra. When it, you know, there's plenty of people out there. Like I said, my friend Scott was dating at 300 pounds and had no trouble. And I'm not talking, he was going out with, you know, women of a normal weight, you know. So I just think some of it's about fear of using that as the reason to not go do it, you know. It's the Nike thing, you know. The Nike thing of dating, just do it. Lost 200 pounds, lots of loose skin, how to deal with it? Well, it's not easy. I mean, it took me years to... I mean, I know Jack S. talks about it took him years to be able to go to the beach and take his shirt off. I was the same way, you know. It is one of those things. Now, there are some corrective things that can be done about it surgically, but still, you know, if you've gotten to a point where somebody likes you enough that you're going to bed with them, chances are it's not going to be that important, you know. I don't know. Do you have anything?
I have no experience in that.
All right, do we want to move on to the sexuality part? There are some other questions, but they seem to be dovetailed into sexuality a little. And we sort of
tell them they will be getting a break.
You're going to get a break. What we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about sexuality, and then we're going to take a break for about 10 minutes. And when we come back, we'll do the questions and open sharing about sexuality.
You know, it actually looks like people may want a break.
Oh, okay. You want to take a break now? Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, we'll take a break.